Eric? André asked.
I've no objection. Very well, do it. Eric swam up into the empty lounge and poised himself on the ladder. Bev's face was framed by the floor hatch, grinning up at him. Good luck, Eric said. He datavised a code lock at the hatch's seal processor, then turned the manual failsafe handle 90 degrees. Bev twisted round as soon as the carbetanium square closed. He pulled a medical anonic package from a first aid case on the wall. Hold on, Brendan, I'm coming in. Red environmental warning lights were flashing on the panel beside the circular airlock tube hatch. Bev datavised his override authority into the management processor, and the hatch began to swing back. Eric opened a channel into the lounge's communication net processor and accessed the lower deck cameras. He watched Bev screw up his face as the fumes blew out of the open hatchway. Emerald green light flared out of the space plane's cabin, sending a thick, blindingly intense beam searing along the airlock tube to wash the lower deck. Caught full square, Bev yelled, his hands coming up instinctively to cover his eyes. A ragged stream of raw white energy shot along the center of the green light, smashing into him. The camera failed. Bev! Eric shouted. He sent a stream of instructions into the processor. A visualization of the lower deck systems materialized, a ghostly reticulation of colored lines and blinking symbols. Eric, what's happening? André demanded. They're in the fucking ship. Code lock, all the hatches now. Now, goddammit! The schematic's colored lines were vanishing one by one. Eric stared wildly at the floor, as if he could see what was happening through the metal decking. Then the lounge lights went out. 5 minutes until we land at our new drop zone, and the tension in the cabin is really starting to bite. Kelly Tyrrell sub-vocalized into a neural mnemonics memory cell. We know something has happened to at least 5 other space planes. What everyone is now asking themselves is, will the extra distance protect us? Do the invaders only operate below their protective covering of red cloud? She accessed the space plane's sensors to observe the magnificent, monstrous spectacle again. 1,000-kilometer-long bands of glowing red nothingness suspended in the air. Astounding. This far inland, they were slim and complex, interwoven like the web of a drunken spider above the convoluted tributaries. When she had seen them from orbit, calm and regular, they had intimidated her. Up close and churning like this, they were just plain frightening. Coiling belts were edge-on with a starboard wing, growing larger as they spun through the sky towards the space plane. It was an excellent image, a little bit too realistic for peace of mind. But then the space plane's sensor array was all military-grade. Long, streamlined recesses on both sides of the fuselage belly were now holding tapering cylindrical weapons pods, maser cannons providing a 360-degree cover, an electronic warfare suite, and a stealth envelope. They weren't quite an assault fighter, but neither were they a sitting duck like some of the space planes. Typical that Joshua would have a multi-role space plane. No, thank God Joshua had a multi-role space plane. 40 minutes into the descent, and already she missed him. You're so weak, she swore at herself. Kelly was starting to have serious second thoughts about the whole assignment. Like all war correspondents, she supposed, being on the ground was very different to sitting in the office anticipating being on the ground, especially with the appearance of that red cloud. The 7 mercenaries had discussed that appearance ad nauseam the whole way in from the emergence point. Reza Malin, the team's leader, had seemed almost excited by the prospect of venturing below it. Such adverse circumstances were a challenge, he said, something new. She had taken time to get to know all of them reasonably well, so she knew what Reza said wasn't simply bravado. He had been a Confederation Navy Marine at one time. An officer, she guessed. He wasn't very forthcoming about that period of his life, nor subsequent contracts as a marshal on various Stage 1 colony planets. but he must have been good at the second oldest profession. Money in large quantities had paid for a considerable number of physical enhancements and alterations.